Good morning, Pilgrim. This morning I'm going to return to that sermon I preached a couple of days ago from Spurgeon. This is the second part of it, about Satan wanting you, being after you. He wants you all right. What is it that Satan considers with a view to the injury of God's people? If he can't get you, he'll hurt you. It cannot be said of him as of God that he knows us altogether, that he knows all about us. But since he's been now nearly 6,000 years dealing with folks like us, poor fallen humanity, he must have acquired a very vast experience in that time, and having been all over the earth, seen many people, many things, and having tempted the highest and the lowest, he must know exceedingly well what the springs of human action are, what our natures are, and how to play upon us, and play us like violins. Satan, he watches and he considers first of all our peculiar infirmities. I mean, we all got them. We all got different ones. We each got our own. He looks us up and down, just as I've seen a horse dealer do with a horse. And he soon finds out wherein we got faults. A common observer might think the horse an exceedingly good one, and as I see it running up and down the road, hey, that's a fine horse. But the dealer sees what I can't see, and he knows how to handle the creature just in such quarters and at such points that he soon discovers any hidden weakness. Satan knows how to look at us and reckon us up from heel to head, so that he'll say of this man, his weakness is lust, or that other, he's got a quick temper, don't he? Or of the other, there's a proud one. Or of the other, what a lazy dolt he is. Yeah, the eye of malice is very quick to perceive weakness. And the hand of enmity soon takes advantage of it. When the arch spy finds a weak place in the wall of a castle, he takes care to plant his battering ram and begin his siege at the weakest point. You may conceal even from your dearest friend. You may conceal something from your friends, your infirmities, your weaknesses, but you'll not conceal it from your worst enemy. He has lynx eyes like a cat, like an eagle, and he detects in a moment the joint in your harness, the weak point in your armor. He goes about with a match. And though you think you've covered all the gunpowder of your heart, covered your temper well, yet he knows how to find a crack to put his match through. He can light you up. Much mischief will he do, unless eternal mercy shall prevent it, unless God keeps him from it. So I would stay close to God, Pilgrim. He takes care also to consider our frames and our state of mind. If the devil would attack us when our mind is in certain moods, he should be more than a match for. He knows this, so he stays away from us at such times when we're strong. He wants a weak one. Some men are more ready for temptation when they are distressed, when they're depressed, desponding. That's when the fiend will come after him. Others will be more liable to take fire when they're jubilant, full of joy. Then will he strike his spark into the tinder. Certain persons, when they are much vexed and tossed to and fro, can be made to say almost anything. And others, when their souls are like perfectly placid waters, still water runs deep, are just then in a condition to be navigated by the devil's vessel. As a worker in metals knows that one metal is to be worked at such a heat and another at a different temperature, as those who have to deal with chemicals know that at a certain heat one fluid will boil while another reaches the boiling point much earlier, So Satan knows exactly the temperature at which to work us to this purpose, to his purpose. Small pots. They boil directly, they are put on a fire. So little men of quick temper are soon in a passion. Larger vessels require more time and more coal before they'll boil, but when they do boil, it's a boil indeed, not soon forgotten or abated. The enemy, like a fisherman, watches his fish. He adapts his bait to his prey, knows in what seasons and time the fish are most likely to bite. This hunter of souls comes upon us unawares, and often we're taken in a fault, caught in a trap through an unwatchful frame of mind. That rare collector of choice sayings, Thomas Spencer, has the following, which is much to the point. The chameleon, when he lies on the grass to catch flies and grasshoppers, he takes upon him the color of the grass, as the octopus doth the color of the rock under which he lurks, that the fish may boldly come near him without any suspicion of danger. Then, in like manner, Satan turns himself into that shape which we least fear. He sets before us such objects of temptation are most agreeable to our natures that so we may be the sooner drawn into his net. He sails with every wind and blows us that way which we incline ourselves through the weakness of our nature. Is there a knowledge in matter of faith deficient? He tempts us to err. Is our conscience tender? He tempts us to scrupulosity and to too much preciseness. Is our conscience, like the ecliptic line, some latitude? He tempts us to carnal liberty. Are we bold-spirited? He tempts us to presumption. Are we timorous and distrustful? He tempts us to desperation. Are we of a flexible disposition? He tempts us to inconstancy. Are we stiff? He labors to make obstinate heretics, schismatics, or rebels of us. Are we of an austere temper? He tempts us to cruelty. Are we soft and mild? He tempts us to indulgence and foolish pity. Are we hot in matters of religion? He tempts us to blind zeal and superstition. Are we cold? He tempts us to Laodicean lukewarmness. In these ways he lays his traps, that one way or the other he may ensnare us. You know, he also takes care to consider our position among men. There are a few persons who are most easily tempted when they're alone. They are the subject then of great heaviness of mind, and they may be driven to most awful crimes. Perhaps the most of us are more liable to sin when we are in company. In some company I never should be led into sin. Into another society I could scarcely venture, because I would sin. Many are so full of levity that those of us who are inclined the same way can scarcely look them in the face without feeling our besetting sin set a-going, and others are so somber that if you meet a brother of like mold, they are pretty sure between them to invent an evil report of the goodly land. Satan knows where to overtake you in a place where you lie open to his attacks. He will pounce upon you, swoop like a bird of prey from the sky where he has been watching for a time to make his descent with the prospect of great success. How, too, will he consider our condition in the world? He looks at one man and says, that man has property. It's of no use my trying such and such things on him. And here's another man who's very poor. I will catch him in that net. Then again, he looks at the poor man and says, I can't tempt him to this folly, but I'll lead the rich man into it. As a sportsman has a gun for wild fowl, another for the deer and the game, so has Satan a different temptation for various men. I don't suppose that the queen's temptation ever will annoy Mary, the kitchen maid. I don't suppose, on the other hand, that Mary's temptation will ever be very serious to me. Probably you could escape from mine. I don't think you could, and I sometimes fancy I could bear yours, though I question if I could. Satan knows, however, Satan knows just where to smite us, and our position, our capabilities, our education, our standing in society, our calling. These may all be doors through which he may attack us. You, who have no calling at all, are in peculiar peril. I wonder the devil doesn't swallow you outright. The most likely man to go to hell is the man who has nothing to do on this earth. I say that seriously. I believe that there cannot happen a much worse evil to a person than to be placed where he has no work. And if I should ever be in such a state, I would get employment at once for fear I should be carried off body and soul by the evil one. Idle people tempt the devil to tempt them. Let us have something to do. Let us keep our minds occupied. For if not, we make room for the devil. Industry will not make us gracious, but the want of industry may make us vicious. Have always something on the anvil or in the fire. In books or work or health to play, I would be busy too, for Satan finds some mischief still for idle hands to do. So Watts taught us in our childhood, so let us believe in our manhood. Books or works or such recreations are necessary for health should occupy our time. For if I throw myself down in indolence, like an old piece of iron, I must not wonder that I grow rusty with sin. Nor haven't done yet. No, I'm not done. Satan, when he makes his investigations, he notices all the objects of our affection. I doubt not when he went around Job's house, he observed it as carefully as thieves do a jeweler's premises when they mean to break into them and steal everything. They very cunningly take account of every door, every window, every fastening. They fail not to look at the next door house, for they may have to reach the treasure through the building which adjoins it. So when the devil went round, jotting down in his mind all Job's position, he thought to himself, "There are the camels and the oxen, the asses and the servants. Yeah, I can use all these very admirably." Then he thought, "There are the three daughters. There are the 10 sons, and they go feasting. I shall know where to catch them. And if I can just blow the house down when they're feasting, that will afflict the father's mind and more severely, for he'll say, 'Oh, that they had died when they had been praying, rather than when they had been feasting and drinking wine.' I'll put down, too, in the inventory, says the devil, his wife. I dare say I can use her." And accordingly it came to that. Nobody could have done what Job's wife did. None of the servants could have said that sad sentence so stingingly. Or if she meant it very kindly, none could have said it with such a fascinating air as Job's own wife. "Bless God and die," as it may be read, or "curse God and die." Ah, Satan, thou hast plowed with Job's heifer, but thou hast not succeeded. Job's strength lies in his God, not in his hair, or else thou mightest have shorn him as Samson was shorn. Perhaps the evil one had even inspected Job's personal sensibilities, and so selected that form of bodily affliction which he knew to be most dreaded by his victim. He brought upon him a disease which Job may have seen and shuddered at in poor men outside the city gates. Brethren, Satan knows quite as much in regard to you. You have a child, Satan knows that you idolize it. Ah, says he, "There's a place for my wound in him." Even the partner of your bosom may be made a quiver in which hell's arrow shall be stored till the time they may come, and then she may prove the bow from which Satan will shoot him. Watch even your neighbor, and her that lieth in your bosom, for you know not how Satan may get an advantage over you. Our habits, our joys, our sorrows, our retirements, our public positions, all may be made weapons of attack by this desperate foe, the Lord's people. We have snares everywhere, in our bed, at our table, in our house, and in the street. There are gins and trap falls in company. There are pits when we are alone. We may find temptations in the house of God as well as in the world, traps in our high estate and deadly poisons in our abasement and our littleness. We must not expect to be rid of temptations till we cross the Jordan, and then thank God we are beyond gunshot of the enemy. The last howling of the dog of hell will be heard as we descend into the chill waters of the black stream. But when we hear the hallelujah of the glorified, we shall have done with the black prince forever and forever. That's it for today. Satan is after us. He'd love to cut us down. Yeah. Especially us that are close to the Lord. He would love to put a wall between us. So think on these things, Pilgrim. God bless. Have a blessed, blessed day with our Lord. God bless.